Well, good morning, everybody. This time I didn't have to ask you to sit down and be quiet, so wow. Well, I want to say it's good to have you, and I appreciate you being here. It's exciting for me to get to study God's Word with you, and it's not always easy to get up in the morning, especially when time changes, and so it looks like I made it. And y'all made it, so I guess we're doing okay, right? Nobody's an hour behind yet, unless you normally go to first service and now you're accidentally going to second service. So it's good to have you all here. Our class topic is epic failures in the Bible, or epic failures of the Bible. And I wanted to share a little story with you about my choice of words for epic is... Lately, I feel like I hear it and see it everywhere on advertisements and on movies and all types of things where they use the word epic. And it's been driving me nuts, to be perfectly honest. It bothered me because an epic, something that I was always taught in school, was these long, heroic stories. And that's not really the impression I get for the way that the word's being used now. And so I kind of stumbled into using the word just out of, it just has been something that's kind of rubbing at me funny. And so I thought, how ironic is it that whenever I was considering something to teach, that that word is what kept coming up. And the journey throughout Scripture and throughout the characters we're going to look at really, to me, fit within that heroic story, a long, prolonged story of heroes. And so... when we talk about epic failures of the Bible, we're discussing folks that we, in some ways, almost idolize, but folks that we really look up to. And what we're doing is we're trying to examine their lives to see the way that they're human and understand that while we look up to them, they had different struggles in their lives, just like you and I have. And the intent here is to help encourage one another, to be able to look at these heroes, to be able to look at these examples in Scripture and to say, you know what? Wow, these folks were human. They had all these things going on in their lives. They had struggles. They had ups. They had downs. And they were faithful people, and God used them to do amazing things. And I'm convinced that God still looks to use us to do amazing things. And while they may not be chronicled or they may not have miraculous type examples like what we see in Scripture, God has a desire and a use for us if we're willing to faithfully serve Him. And so that's the intent of our class, is to try to understand that. And then as we do that, to talk about these things, to talk about our own lives, to talk about our own examples in faith. So if you'll recall, our previous class helped us understand that failure can be affected by perspective and by timing, the way that we view it. And we looked at Abraham and Sarah and tried to examine the ways in their lives that we could see, wow, would we have done it that way? Would we have understood things the way that they understood things? We also discussed the fact that God uses people who are faithful despite the times that they make mistakes. So this morning, I want to discuss hopelessness in life. And what I would like us to do is talk about hopelessness in life and how it may cause us to feel like failures. And to do that, we're going to turn to Genesis chapter 30, and we're going to read a bit about one of our faithful heroes, Joseph. So if you would, turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 30 so we can read a bit about Joseph. And as we talk about hopelessness, we're going to look at different points in Joseph's life where I believe that if I was living in his shoes, I may have a really hard perspective and a feeling of hopelessness. And then I'm going to look to you all to try to help me understand some things. All right, so in Genesis chapter 30, we're going to get our introduction to Joseph. We're going to read verses 22 through 25. God remembered Rachel. He listened to her and opened her womb. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son and said, God has taken away my disgrace. She named him Joseph and said, may the Lord add to me another son. All right. And then we would also like to turn over to Genesis chapter 35. Now, We're going to read a little bit more about Joseph in Genesis chapter 35 and his background. All right, we're going to read verses 23 through 26. All right, Jacob had 12 sons, the sons of Leah, Reuben, the firstborn of Jacob, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, the sons of Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin, the son of Rachel's maidservants, Bilna, Dan, and Naphtali, the sons of Leah's maidservant, Zilpah, Gad, and Asher. These were the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Padan Aram. All right, I'd also like us to look just a few verses up before that, and we'll read about a little bit more about Joseph, and then I'm going to ask you some questions about what we learned from these. All right, so back up in verse 16. They moved on from Bethel. While they were still some distance from Ephrath, Rachel began to give birth and had great difficulty. And as she was having great difficulty in childbirth, the midwife said to her, "Don't be afraid, for you have another son." As she breathed her last, for she was dying, she named her son Ben-Oni, but his father named him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Over her tomb, Jacob set up a pillar, and to this day, that pillar marks Rachel's tomb. All right, so these are just a couple of quick verses to try to help us get introduced to Joseph to refresh our minds. So what do we know about Joseph? How many brothers did he have? Trick question, kind of. Right, 11 brothers. All right, so 12 total children were born to his parents. Various moms, right? All right, so Joseph has 11 siblings. Who was he? Who were his parents? Rachel was his mom. And his dad was? Jacob, all right. And what happened to his mom? What did we read about? She died in childbirth, all right. Now, I want us to think about this as we read along later and how that might have impacted Joseph and his situation. All right, so keep that in the back of your mind. Okay, now let's skip over to Genesis chapter 37. Let's read verses 2 through 5. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the son of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed to it." And his brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he goes on, he has another dream, and he shares that with them, and that makes them burn with hatred even more. And his father ends up rebuking him about his dream. And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept it in mind, if you keep on reading. All right, so what is unique about this boy named Joseph? What's unique about him? All right, yes. All right, so he really, really enjoyed a good, popular relationship with his father. Okay, favored. What else? How'd he dress? What'd he wear? Sorry? All right, his brothers hated him. Yes. That's a good question. So what I would like us to do is, all right, so not only did his brothers hate him and his father really, 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 really have an affection for him. He also had this coat, and he had these dreams, okay? And it made me think or try to question and understand, you know, do we ever have those family dynamics in our own lives? Yeah. How hard is it to grow up in families with favoritism? Anybody struggle with that? Yeah. We all do, right? How hard is it to see, if you reflect on your own life, to see your mom and dad or your parents, those responsible for your care, show favor to somebody else at what you feel is your own expense? Isn't that a tough spot to be in? And so we see this with his brothers, right? They despise him. Their moms are different than his mom. And this is another point that I hadn't really thought a whole lot about before, and I don't know if it's just I had breezed across that, but the fact that his mom passed away. All right, so, you know, what do we recall about Jacob and Rachel and their marriage? Yes. Okay.
She was his favorite. He was Joseph, and she was the firstborn child of his favorite wife.
Okay. Absolutely. So we see a lot of interesting things in family dynamics within Joseph's family, right? And not only did he have two different moms, right? Or I say he had two different moms, but then there were the maidservants, right? That until Rachel gave birth or became pregnant, you know, offered up maidservants to provide heirs for the family. And so we saw that with Abraham and Sarah also, right? And it led to some ramifications that we talked about may even affect us today with the way that different parts of the world interpret the sacrifice on the altar, right? And so we get all these things that play into the way that Joseph is viewed by his brothers. And then you couple that with the dream that he has and the dream that he shares, and then he becomes known as Joseph the Dreamer by his brothers, and he's hated and he's despised. Have you ever wanted people to like you or to belong? Have you ever had that feeling to where you wanted to be liked by other folks or have a sense of belonging? I believe that honestly all of us have that feeling within us. We look for acceptance. In many ways, right, that's one of the reasons we assemble as Christians, so that we can be gathered together, so that we can belong to one another, so that we can share in our struggles. Sometimes I feel like a huge failure personally when my family doesn't have a sense of belonging. I can't help that feeling, but sometimes I wonder if Joseph had a similar desire to be wanted, approved, and accepted by his brothers, and sharing his dreams and trying to relate to them or not having his mom around. It's different. And I'm a person that hasn't always had my mom around. And it affects you in ways that others don't understand if they've always had that close bond. And so I was just curious, you know, if any of that impacted the way that, hey, aren't I neat? Am I neat? I've got a dream, or, you know, just different thoughts that went through my mind. Have you ever thought about the power that groups have when it comes to feeling like you belong? You ever thought about that? Yeah, no, we never thought about how the power of groups can impact us. Sometimes it's not a lack of effort. Sometimes it's people wanting or needing to feel superior. And that's where sometimes when I read this, I feel like his brothers were trying to take some type of power or control to have a feeling of superiority, to have a feeling of being in charge, or to lessen Joseph because he was so loved by his father. And I believe they craved that love and attention that their brother received. And we may act that way in our own lives without realizing it or without being aware of it to the detriment of others, that we cut down other people. We don't allow them to associate. We don't allow them to belong because we like having that power. We like having that presence. We like having that attention. And we can look at that through our own families. We can look at that in pretty much in any place that people are gathered together and work together or associate together. I bet we could find examples of this. And I would also suspect that if those of you that work or have recently retired, you can reflect upon a time in your life where you were in the workplace where some folks wanted a promotion or they wanted to be seen a certain way. And so they may, what we call, throw somebody under the bus so that they would appear to look better than those around them. And so sometimes I feel like they had so much hatred within themselves and they so desperately wanted the love and attention that they saw around them that they would do anything. And what we find out, they really do anything to get that and to have that person removed from their lives. All right, so I believe that all of us can experience this, and probably, looking around the room, we've all experienced this, and probably have been on both sides of the equation. All right, I would like us to skip down to Genesis chapter 37, this time in verse 17. This time in verse 17. We're going to read verses 17 through 21, and then we'll skip down and read a few more verses. All right, so Joseph is going at his father's request to check in on his brothers. And this could also be another part where maybe there's some animosity brewing there because he's always checking in on them. And we read earlier he gave a bad report about what was taking place. So here we are. He's going to check on. In verse 17 he says he's looking for him and somebody finds him wandering around in the wilderness. And they tell him, "They've moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, let's go to Dothan." So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing. And they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What would we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. And then skip down to verse 36. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. So in this portion of Joseph's life, what happens to him? Well, how would you describe it if this was you and you just went through all of this? Could we say that Joseph lost everything this day? He lost his family. Is that a pretty big deal? He lost his friends, maybe back where he normally lived. He lost his wealth. And he lost his freedom. Just like that. All of this happened on this day, following out, you know, actions asked for by his dad, and he loses everything.
Reminds you of Job.
Absolutely. Yeah. I really don't know, and there might be somebody out here that's looked into it more than I have, but I haven't ventured to look at his age at this point. Okay. Conjecture?
No, maybe you can read on, but like it says that 30 he was this and all that, and I think he was that age. I'm just guessing, but I thought I saw it somewhere in there.
Yeah, I'll make a point to come back and look at that after looking at it more closely, but honestly, in this study, didn't look at his age. How do you think it felt to have at the hands of your family, even though you know that they hate you and they haven't said anything nice, but being stripped of your coat and thrown into a pit? Good day, bad day? Bad day. Absolutely. Now, the other side of this, yes, sir. Absolutely. Now, I want to stop here and take a moment to talk about hatred and what fills our hearts. Do you see what hatred does in the lives of people? This had built up within his brothers to such a degree that they were willing to, at all costs, and who cares about the ramifications from a long-term standpoint, hey, well, let's not really kill him, right, because he's our flesh and blood, but let's get rid of him. That's what hatred does in our lives, right? Any of these things or these grudges or these ideas that have built and festered in our life can grow and cause us to do things that is unconscionable under normal circumstances and with a good heart. And I don't want us to read through this and to not look over that. They hated and despised to the point that they couldn't say anything nice to him. They had something going on in their heart that's not right. And the part and the reason I want to stop here is for us to think about our own lives and to be careful and to caution us that if we do harbor some upset feelings or some concerns deep within us, that we need to address them, because we will be compelled to act upon what we continue to harbor and let fester deep down inside. All right, so during this point in Joseph's life, do you think he had some time to think that day and during that time period? Is this a hopeful or a hopeless moment in time if this is you? Hopeless is some of what I've seen. Oh, my goodness. You know, who knows where you could end up, right? At this point, a lot of negativity could have consumed Joseph. And as we discussed last week with our success or failure meter, where do we see this right now? If you evaluate a life and somebody has potential and has all the prestige, and now they're sold into slavery. Success or failure at this point? That's how we would define it, wouldn't it? All right? Yes. All right, so what I want us to do is to take a time out for just a second, all right? Excellent point, perspective in life. Now, We venture to guess that Joseph's a younger person at this point in his life. Up to this point, besides his mom passing away and the way that his brothers treated him, how's life been? Seems okay to me, right? I mean, now, think about your life. Have you had ups and downs? Anybody had really hard times in their life? Struggle? Oh my goodness. Did it challenge your perspective about the world at the time? Did it make you question your belief system? Did it make you question, why am I here? Why is this happening to me? What did I do? Anybody ever face those types of situations? They shape and they mold us, don't they? And during this time, we find out a lot about Joseph as we read through the different events. And we talked about identity. And we find out a lot about Joseph as we move through these. And we're going to look at each of these in smaller portions. All right. So right now, Joseph's life, we know the end result, right? We all know, you know, biblical hero. But right now, at this point in his life, I can't imagine finding myself losing everything that had been previously precious to me or taken for granted. I can't imagine being hauled off and losing my personal freedoms. Yes. Yep. So we'll move on to that here in a little bit. Yes, sir. Absolutely. So it's interesting that y'all both brought this up, and I'll get over to you in just a moment. I have this note in my Bible about somebody's conjecturing what they feel like Joseph was at this point in his life. And the way that he talks about him, he says, God revealed Joseph's future by way of two dreams. Foolishly, Joseph told everything to his brothers who hated him all the more. And this is where he talks about how this person feels Joseph was. He says, the spoiled, naive Joseph we meet here is a different character from the careful, prudent leader who would emerge from prison years later to lead in Egypt. Now, that's this person's opinion about where Joseph is, but We can reflect about how we acted and lived as younger people in our lives, right? Even, I mean, I look back even just, you know, a year or two ago, and we can see the difference of what perspective gives us. Let's move back over to your comment. Absolutely. And in many ways, he pays his dues, right? And maybe at the time, we may not understand why we're enduring what we're enduring to teach us lessons and to help shape and mold us to prepare us for something bigger and greater in the future. Yes. Absolutely. And so we're going to see, you know, this evolution within every aspect of his life, right? We're going to see Joseph here. He's a favored son. He's held in high regard in many ways if we look at him. And then we'll see him move to that role within a household, and he'll get the same thing. And then we'll see him move in prison. He'll move to a high role again. And then we'll see him do that again in Pharaoh's household. So I'd like us to continue to move in that regard. We'll turn to Genesis chapter 39. And again, all of this, thinking about different aspects and perspectives of life, where at any moment in time, we could look at Joseph's life here and see that, wow, there's nothing good about being in servitude and losing all these things. And what's, he could be filled with so many negative and bitterness within himself, that all these other things that we read about and we know from our previous studies in life could have been missed if his perspective had not been what it is. And so we'll read a little bit about that. Now, verse 1 in chapter 39, we're going to read verses 1 through 13. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left Joseph in charge and care of everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns is entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called to her servants. "Look," she said to them, This Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. So now we move on to Joseph and Potiphar's house, and it seems like a pretty positive development. What's going on in terms of Joseph being in this household? What's happening? Growth, right? Everything this guy touches, it phenomenally flourishes. So much to the point that his master fully trusts everything to him. Complete and total trust and care to running of his household, everything except for the food he eats. Total trust in this household to this servant. That's an amazing change of events, right? We go from being sold and thrown into a pit to being a lowly servant with no name, no regard, except that God blesses everything that he does. And how amazing is it when God blesses what people do? It's pretty noticeable, isn't it? God is powerful and can do more things than we could ever imagine. But what happens? Potiphar's wife, right? Wow. Look at that guy. All right. What does Joseph do when he's confronted by Potiphar's wife? What's he do? Hey, whoa. And he talks about all the ways that he has trust with the master, right? Your husband trusts me with everything. He doesn't worry about a single thing that I do. Now that's trust. Complete and total faith in Joseph and his character and the way that he lives and trusting things to his care. And he walks away. How many times does he tell Potiphar's wife no? Day after day, right? And finally, he tries to remove himself from being any place near her, is what we read. Tries to avoid her. What's that say about Joseph? Now, imagine this situation nowadays, and somebody has the same experience where they're put into care and they're incredibly successful, and a spouse of somebody else comes on to them day after day after day. How many times have we read about that, or seen it in the news, or seen it affected in a body of believers? And Joseph does everything he can to try to avoid the situation, and unfortunately, it doesn't work out, or fortunately, right? So she tries to forcibly get Joseph into bed, and he flees. How important is that for us in life? To flee. To turn and run. Do you think that was easy on Joseph to flee out of a room, to run away? And then look what happens. He was punished for doing the right thing. Punished for doing the right thing. But he fled. And he could have so easily done the opposite. So easily done the opposite. Absolutely. And so, he fled. And I think that's very important for us to realize. It's okay to flee. It may still be painful, but it's okay to flee. It's expected that we flee from temptation, that we flee from things that aren't right. And Joseph did that, and he got tossed into oblivion again. All right, so where does Joseph end up after this? Prison, right? Oh my. He did the right thing. It still hurt. At this point, is Joseph's life a success or failure? He stood for what's right. So do you define success by doing what's right? He's successful. Or do you define success as what has he accomplished? Well, he's in prison again, or he's lost his freedom again. Even whatever freedoms he had as a servant, he's lost that. So he went from, you know, a free person to a slave with some freedoms, to now he's in a pit, a place where folks are forgotten. it seems like, in this prison. All right. So I would like us to look over to Genesis 39. We're going to read verses 20 through 23, and then another verse in chapter 40. So starting in chapter 39, verse 20, Joseph's master took him, put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those he held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Joseph's introduced to two people that served in the king's court. One's executed, one is restored into power, and Joseph interprets the dreams for both. And after hearing the positive dream, the guy that's executed says, "Hey, please interpret my dream," only to find out he's going to die in 3 days. And Joseph makes, hey, whenever this happens, don't forget about me down here. Don't forget that I did this for you. Please make mention. And how long does it take for that person to fulfill their commitment to Joseph? 2 years. So at this point, 2 years later, he gets the opportunity to interpret Pharaoh's dreams and ultimately is put in charge. So the story of Joseph is full of ups and downs, and we're not going to go any further than that part. And we haven't even got to the part where he sees his family. We've all had a hard life, right? We've all had ups and downs. Who's had a life like this? Who's been falsely imprisoned? And imagine if he just accepted his position in life. Imagine if he was bitter and complained all the time. We find ourselves in these difficult situations, in these trials, in these struggles, where we could look like a failure to everybody on all types of levels. And yet God is working amazingly in our lives if we will hold fast to him and remain faithful and to look for his good timing, to be defined by him with his identity, and to know that true success is not defined by what we hear out in the world, but it's by what doing right is all about, and doing right by what's in God's eyes. He suffered big time, and he could have been a failure several times, yet he would still say in Genesis 41, verse 16, which Roger pointed out, God will interpret the dream. God, through Joseph, saved countless lives during the famine, while also preparing for the Exodus later to come to truly display God's glory. And what I want to leave us with, and I know we're out of time, is that God uses each one of us for his glory. And if we serve him faithfully, countless people are going to know and be impacted by the way that we live our lives. Regardless of whether we're good people or bad people, we're going to impact lives. And God can be glorified by the way that we choose to live and the way that we choose to survive through the different circumstances we find ourselves in. Thank you very much for your time.